Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this week's episode of Terror with a Twist of Limes. I am your host, Limes Marshall, and with me tonight is my co-host, Robin to my Batman tonight. Sometimes it's the other way around that I'm Robin to his Batman, Carl Kafer. Hi, Carl. Say hi to the audience.
But I always wanted to be Howard the Duck. I don't know why, but...
We can do that. That's cool.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, here's Howard the Duck, Carl Kafer.
Thank you.
And our very special guest on the show tonight, very excited about this one, is a gentleman. He is very prolific. He's an author. He is a screenwriter. He is an actor. And he is a CIO also, Mr. Roy French. Roy, if you'd like to say hello to our audience, very nice to have you on the show, sir.
Oh, good evening. It's a pleasure to be here. Have a chat with you.
Fantastic. So, Roy, you know, obviously, you know, we're going to be getting into, you know, the exciting movie that you guys, you know, put together with Factory Films there. I believe this was, was this your first screenplay, Twisted Pieces, or was this second?
No, this is the first one I wrote. I adapted it from one of my novels called Raven's Blood. So we can get
Raven's
that
Blood.
A little
okay.
Later.
Fantastic. So we're obviously going to come around to Twisted Pieces, but you talk about Raven's Blood, and I'm holding in my hands Raven's Justice, which is the new novel that just came out this year. Correct.
Correct. Yes.
So I'm wondering, is Raven your kind of ongoing character through your stories here, Roy?
Yes. When I first wrote the novel, it was originally, the first novel that came out in 1992 was called A Sense of Honor. And I thought it was one of those, like a one and done. And I established the character of the Raven in that novel. And, you know, after I had finished it and it, you know, was published and all that sort of stuff, I discovered that I hadn't quite finished with the Raven. And,
you had a franchise,
you know,
character.
Ten more novels have transpired. And it turns out that I really, the type of authors that I love to read have a series character. And I've continued the character of the Raven through all of the books. And that's why they've
all
been rebranded.
Amazing. So let's go, you know what? So let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to a brief history of Roy. Because long before there was the Raven, there was an Irish lad named Roy. And somewhere on his journey, like myself, you know, you picked up a pen and you decided you wanted to write. I obviously know how my journey unfolded. What about you, Roy? What was it that kind of, give us an idea of what sort of captured you about writing and what kind of got you on the path of, you know, sort of, you know, spooky and macabre and thriller type subjects?
Well, you know, my story starts, you know, people ask me when I started writing. I think the genesis of it all was when I was 12 years old and went to high school in Ballymena. One of the classes, it was English literature, we had to read a book called King Solomon's Mines by L. Rider Haggard. And that was the first book that I ever read, and my mind just exploded. And from then on, I've been a prolific reader. And, you know, read everything I could get at the local library. And I did read a lot of books about the occult. Dennis Wheatley was a famous British writer. And he wrote a whole series of novels called, you know, The Devil Rides Out was one of the most famous. So I've read all of those and all the books about Dracula, you know. And but I always liked the thrillers. And, you know, so read. So long story short, you know, university, all the rest of it. And came to Canada, always reading. And I was reading this book that had been really hyped in the press. And, you know, about halfway through it, you know, I go, this is crap. I could do better, you know, straight away. And that was the genesis of me starting to write. So I, you know, put pen, well, bought an old typewriter, and off I set to try and write a story. The first effort wasn't particularly stellar, but it gave me a great deal of rejection slips from publishers. And but I learned the process and character
yep.
development, and you know, read. And then the second one was A Sense of Honor, and it was picked up by Hounslow Press here in Toronto, and that's where the story started.
Wow, that's awesome, and I love that you, you know, on a personal note, and I'm sure I kind of heard Carl there as well. I know he picked up on that as well. Was I love the fact that you're a Dennis Wheatley fan. Because,
yes.
man, that guy knew how to write some really great, great stories.
He really did,
right? You know, and in some ways, I mean, you know, he was kind of one of the first of the sort of the franchise horror writers with these, because he had his ongoing characters they would do. Who was it, Carl? Was it Duke de Richelieu, Roy? Who was the one? He was portrayed by Christopher Lee in the movie The Devil Rides Out. Was it the Duke de Richelieu?
I am not sure, to be honest with you.
But he was Wheatley's ongoing character. So,
yes. Yep.
So would you say that seeing those kind of ongoing characters in horror novels, did that give you a sense of kind of trajectory towards what would become sort of The Raven?
Yeah, I think so. What I always enjoyed, by the time I got to the library and discovered Wheatley, he had numerous books under his belt. And then when you pick up the novel and you start the next one, you're intimately familiar with the character. And that's what I really enjoy, you know. The people that pick up the Raven series, like the character of the Raven is... You know, he's the protagonist through all of the books, but there's a motley crew that surround them of ex-special forces characters, and people get to know them, and they love to talk about those characters as well as the main one. So that's part of what I enjoy, is just hearing the discussion around, you know, oh, I wasn't expecting that, or, you know, I really like the character. So that's
right.
The thing I enjoy now. I have a little family that come with me on this journey as I go. So
can I interrupt you for a moment?
Yeah, go for it, Carl.
Okay, so I have a good friend of mine, Roy, by the name of Derek Ferguson, and
yes.
Derek has his series character called Dylan, and I was just wondering if you consider your Raven series, you know, part of the new pulp explosion that's happened in the last 15, 20 years.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is not a literary highbrow fiction. This is pulp fiction. You know, for me, at its finest. It's the stories are. There's always a moral center to all of the stories, but they are contemporary, and I spend a huge amount of time doing research into, you know, whatever story or whatever facet that I'm going to explore in the story. And that's it. You know, people describe them as like it's a wild ride, because I have numerous people that talk to me like, you know, I started reading it last night at 4 o'clock this morning. I'm still reading the damn thing, you know, and I got to go to work. You know, that gives me huge amounts of satisfaction, knowing that, you know, I've drawn you in. And you can't put the book down. That to me is a huge compliment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And would you do you linger, like, obviously I know you from your thrillers and obviously yes. Twisted Pieces, which we'll talk about, which I got to tell you, I really enjoyed. I thought it was a blast, and we'll get into that. But is it always kind of dark subject matter? I can only speak for me, and I know that. I just literally live in the horror zone, and that's where I live and breathe, and I can't seem to move out of it. Like, something draws me back. How is that for you, Roy? Is it all thrillers?
Yeah, it's all thrillers. It's not, I don't, Like, there are many dark and evil characters in the books that I write. And, people read about this stuff. You read it in the newspapers. So there's a lot of the things that are actually snatched from the newspapers about, you know, drug running, people trafficking, terrorist attacks. You know, these things are contemporary. And it was interesting, and I've heard it a number of times, is the plot of A Sense of Honor, the first novel, was a bunch of terrorists who had stolen or had sort of hijacked a 747 coming from London Heathrow to Toronto, and they were going to crash it into downtown Toronto. That was in 1992.
Right.
So it makes you know when 9/11 happened, it gives you pause for thought.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's wow, that's freaky.
Yes.
And obviously the world changed when 9/11 happened.
Yes.
Did your writing change? Because you say obviously you had that plot back in 1992. You say it gave you pause for thought. Did it make you, because obviously, you know, there was, if we think back to, you know, sort of 9/11 and we think back to Columbine and that kind of period in history where fiction was really coming under the magnifying glass and suddenly it was all about, oh my God, the Matrix is to blame for this. You know, the guys in Columbine were wearing long coats. You know, like horror in general. Did you pause at all and look at your writing and think maybe we're affecting this, or what were your thoughts on that, Roy?
No, not really. I get my inspiration from, you know, many different sources. And, you know, sometimes they, you know, one of the stories, I can't remember, of course, which one it was, but one of them was triggered by the absolute faith that we as human beings place in our physicians. Right? Mm. And this is just an example of one of the stories is that, you know, you go to your doctor and you're not feeling particularly well. And he goes, you know, I've known you for quite some time. He says, we've done some tests and whatnot. You know, I suggest you go and put your affairs in order. You know, you have terminal cancer and there's really not a lot we can do for you. And you go, oh, shit. Now, you're a wealthy man, and you go, well, you know, is there really, really nothing I can do? He said, well, you know, no, conventional treatment will not work. However, there is this clinic that I've heard of in South America that they're doing some experimental work. You know, you could possibly, you know, go and try it out. And if you're a wealthy man, what would you do? You know, so the whole story sort of revolves around drug smuggling and, you know, prostheses internally that are full of, you know, drugs or concentrated cocaine. It's a long, convoluted plot. But it was the kernel of the story was about, you know, if your doctor that you've known for a while tells you that, you know, based on the test they've run, that you have 6 months to live, you know, would you doubt him?
Hmm.
So
right.
That's you know, the stories come from the strangest places, you know. So it's not necessarily to do with, you know, the violence you see in the streets or violence in schools or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's more around, you know, that doesn't sound right, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I want to be clear as well. I'm in no way, shape, or form. Like, I hate the argument of blaming fiction for what's – like, it drives me up the wall. I mean, I saw, I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was a news thing coming out of the UK again today where I guess two guys have been tried for murder and they looked at their home and saw they had some horror artifacts, like a few action figures in their room.
Yes.
And immediately they're like, oh my God, they were horror fans. This is where, and they're calling this place a house of horrors. And it really looks like some teenager's cluttered bedroom, you know, but it's like, I don't blame fiction and that's not where I was going with that, so please don't think that for a second.
No, not at all.
So where did we get to the, so let's talk a little bit more about how we came to Twisted Pieces? You know, you were obviously you were doing well as a writer. You were enjoying it. Where did the point come on the journey where a script, like a film, actually looked like it was like coming on the horizon there?
Well, what, it was a series of coincidences. This is to deal with my career as a CIO. I was taken on a project in France for a biotech firm. It was a global SAP implementation, and that's a massive software product. And I had to go. I had to learn French, basically, to go work on this project. The people from Berlitz, the fellow from Berlitz who actually taught me French, was also an author. So the typical, we exchanged books, and his was quite sort of esoteric. But he read mine, and he thinks, oh, wow, I really like the way you write your action scenes and your action in your book. So would you be interested in working on a screenplay with me? And I go, oh, yeah, sure, why not? So he had written many screenplays before and had produced some films. And I learned the process of how to write a screenplay through him. So, we collaborated and one friend that was fine. We let it go. And then I started writing my own. And I started my first one that I really loved was I wrote a screenplay called The Boys Are Back. And a good friend of mine, his name is David Finley. He's a composer by trade, and he wrote the score for Twisted Pieces. So David and I tried very hard to get The Boys Are Back made into a film, but we were not successful. But along the way, I met another fellow, again, just a series of what we call synchronistic opportunities. I bumped into him, and he was a filmmaker, an indie filmmaker, but his primary occupation was music videos. So he wanted to get into making films, and we talked about a number of ideas. And then I said that, like, I've adapted one of my books for a screenplay. And he goes, oh, this is really cool. So we sat down, we talked about it, and said, okay, let's make a film. And that was really it. It was nothing more than a series of wonderful coincidences. And we've been working together now for about 8 or 9 years. And he still makes music videos. I appear in the music videos as an actor or an extra, and have tons of fun doing that. And now we've come through and we finished Twisted Pieces.
Amazing.
So that
Amazing.
Was really the genesis of it all. It was just a very happy coincidence all the way along.
Beautiful. And obviously, I've seen Twisted Pieces because, you guys were kind enough to share a copy with me there. Before we talk about it, let's kind of give our audience a little bit of a sense without any spoilers. So the gist of the movie is you've got this crazy-ass doctor that's out there that's basically slicing people up and selling body parts on the internet. Right. And we've got, the good guy there, the square jawed hero that's tracking him down and trying to stop the carnage. And my personal favorite character in it, big shout out to, if I'm pronouncing his name correct, Jeff Sinisak. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Yes. Yes. That's Jeff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Loved him. Loved Murph. I thought Murph was a blast. I was like laughing my ass off. So you got the two heroes trying to track this guy down and stop the carnage. But a movie, a horror movie in particular, is only as good as its villain. So let's talk about Robert Nolan. Where did Robert come into the picture? Obviously, you guys start casting this thing, and you know, where did Robert come in?
Well, fortunately enough, Ryan had worked with Robert a number of times on previous productions. And, was very familiar with his work. He's a really intense character and very lovable, under normal circumstances. And Robert, we sat down and we talked with him and we went through what the character was. And he just, he became the doctor. It was just an amazing transformation to see. And, you know, Ryan wanted him to do certain things. So it worked out wonderfully well. And then we had Ry Barrett and Sandra DaCosta and Jeff. Mm-hmm. These are people that, you know, we met through Robert's connections and Ryan's connections. And it turned out to be a wonderful sort of ensemble cast. But Robert certainly was the anti-hero of the whole thing.
It's funny because you say like that he is like kind of like a, you know, a sweetheart of a guy and stuff. But man, like he's got the look. Like you got to see this, Carl. Like this guy's really like he's a damn good villain in this film. Like really, like he's like Hannibal Lecter material here we're talking.
Well, I saw him in the trailer, so at least I have some visual there. I did see him in the trailer.
Yeah. And there's another guy in it, a guy by the name of Roy French, who plays Featherstone. Come on, Roy, talk about this. You talk about your acting now. You said you're in music videos.
Yes.
Now talk about the acting bug.
Oh, it's just my friend David Finley, he was making his film. It was an homage to Tommy Chiba, like a martial arts flick. And we were driving somewhere, and I can't remember exactly where it was. He said, like, you know, we're trying to cast, we need to get a police detective in the show. And, you know, I need somebody like tall and nasty. And, you know, he looks at me and goes, have you done any acting? I said, yeah. He says, yeah, okay. Well, you can be the detective. I said, oh, sure. And that was it. Yeah. So it's a fun thing to do. I did, and this is just a little anecdote. I did drama in high school, like most people. And I loved it. It was really great. I was in the drama class and all the rest of it. And, you know, my claim to fame is I was on stage with Liam Neeson. We were both in the drama class at high school.
No way.
So Liam and I were on stage together a number of times in the high school productions, and I always tell people I wish I'd paid more attention, you know. But
that's amazing.
Yes, it
that's
is.
Amazing.
So the acting bug was always there, and it's just a fun thing to do. And you know, during your career, you have to behave in certain ways. You know, as a systems analyst, a programmer, a project manager, you're always there's a certain persona you have to project. So, you know, taking on a character, you know, it wasn't a difficult transition for me. So
more of that?
Not as much. I prefer the writing in the background and working with Ryan and, you know, and directing the staff as well. Mm-hmm. But it's always fun to get yourself in front of the camera. And you just have a ball because we have a small crew and everyone knows everyone. It's a very comfortable vibe on set. So we just have a lot of fun when we're doing this. You know, nobody gets their nose out of joint. It's just, you know, and, you know, when we're working with actors, it's a very collaborative process. It's just I write the script and then we'll run through it. And if somebody, that doesn't really make sense. What if I said this or what if I did that? And if it makes sense to us, then yeah. We'll go that way. So that's it gives the actors a wide range of creativity, I would say, as well. And as long as we stay true to the story, works fine for us.
Great, great. Something I gotta say, something I noticed about Twisted Peace is that I was very impressed by because it kind of plays to my way of thinking. I love horror. I mean, we say we're in a golden age of, you know, television and film where, you know, storytelling is so much more complex than it was a long time ago. But for me, I find we went through, especially in the early 2000s, a period where every horror film seemed to be, you know, I think of these Rob Zombie films and such, where they were just littering up the screen with these repulsive characters that you're supposed to identify with. And to me, a movie like when I look at a movie that scared me, The Strangers, The reason the stranger scared me is because you care so deeply about the two protagonists. Like, they're such identifiable characters. And I honestly feel that good horror needs protagonists that you can relate to. And one of the things I liked about Twisted Pieces is, you know, you've got your Murph, you've got your Jake, and you know that these are they're the good guys. There's no sort of cross and double cross here, right? Yeah. And the bad guy is very clearly the bad guy. How do you feel about, is that a conscious storytelling effort on your part, or is that just the way that it kind of fell together?
The story for Twisted Pieces came out of, as they say, Raven's Blood. The doctor, in the novel itself, is not one of the primary characters. It was almost like a subplot in the book. But when I started to write, you know, I thought this would make an interesting screenplay. You know, to take the story of the doctor, who is really a subplot in the book itself, and move it into make him the prime character in a story and in a film. You know, it's one of those things when you're writing something like, you know, Twisted Pieces or some of the other works that I've done, is trying to find an original thought. You know, because, you know, it seems that, you know, You know, serial killers, they're just nasty, or they eat people, or they cut people into bits. You know, it's just like, almost like a caricature. And you want to try and make something different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I went with the doctor. There's something different. As they say, when we talked to Robert about it and the character, this guy is not driven by the joy of killing people. It's all about the money. Right? You know? That said, he was abandoned as a child, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. But he just wants money. And he's found a real niche market to be able to generate this revenue. And then he just wants to disappear.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that was, again, it's trying to find a different spin on a bad person.
Yeah. And like you say, there's so many. But I think you hit a good one there. That was real. Like, I didn't see it coming. I guess I got to ask you, and I know this is, you know, you probably get asked this a gazillion times. What specifically frightens you? Like, obviously, we channel our own fears into these things as writers. What frightens you, Roy?
Frightens me? Yeah, very little. To be honest with you, I can't honestly say that there's a lot of things that frighten me. You know, I grew up in Belfast. It's you know, through a virtual war zone. So,
yeah.
When you live through that sort of thing, you know, you're very happy that you've managed to live this long and enjoy it. It's you tend to appreciate life a lot more than most people. That would be one thing I would say. You know, one thing would be, you know, it'd be horrible to be actually shot in the streets of Toronto after living in Belfast for so long and managing to survive all of that stuff. You know, to be struck down by an errant bullet in Toronto would be somewhat ironic.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, there's not a lot of things that that bother me. I'm a relatively calm person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
if I can interrupt here for a second, Lime.
Go for it, Carl. Go for it, buddy.
So, Roy, I want to ask you, as far as adapting your novel, and you decide to focus on this character, the Doctor, are you at all familiar with a film by Larry Cohen called The Ambulance? At all?
No, is that the one with Nicolas Cage?
No. This is with Eric Roberts. And it's basically a very similar plot, done a little differently. It's not pulp so much as Eric Roberts is an innocent who sees this woman that he was, you know, in love with, or you know, just enamored with, taken by an ambulance out of nowhere, and he follows it, and the doctor, of course, is selling people's parts. It's done a lot more humorous, if you know Larry Cohen, but it has similarities. So the main question is, you know, you don't know that particular film, but as you write and you have this character, the Raven, so on and so forth, are there books specifically, you know, a series or books that were influences in creating this character?
I would say no. He's an original character. And, you know, I always tell people he looks a lot like I do, sounds a lot like I do. So he's sort of almost like an alter ego for me. There are a number of authors, contemporary authors, that I absolutely love. And John Sanford is one who writes the books of with the word prey in the title. And he is a character that lives in Minneapolis. He's a wonderful, wonderful writer. So, you know, I just eat his stuff up. Lee Child with the Reacher character, you know, is another one. Jack Carr, Pierce Hunt. There are a number who write this sort of genre with the series character, and they all have their own, like Mitch Rapp and Vince Flynn, and as I say, Sanford has Lucas Davenport. I read those stories because I enjoy them, and you know, it's not so much that I get inspired by them, but it continues to give me great satisfaction as to this, you know, I see the character evolving and I know the other characters that are involved. He has his own family, as does, well, Lee Child is, Reacher is a bit of a loner, but you know what to expect from him. You know, he has his own sort of moral center. And, you know, the stories that I write, the character, the book I'm working on now, it was strange. I was working on it. I was just sitting writing for a little while before I came on here. The book is called Raven's Compass, and it's all about the moral compass that's inside the Raven. He will work and he will do things and operate in a gray area, but he has his own moral compass that said, I will not go across this line, or I will not do this. And somewhere in the book, and it just happened, it's fortunate enough, it happened tonight. It was, I used the term that he was having a discussion with someone, and you're sort of reflecting on that discussion. And he said, you know, this is where his moral compass, it would not take him. So that's where the title of the book comes from. And at some point I knew I'd have to actually use it. So it was just tonight that it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you talk about moral compass, when I was a kid, I read a lot of science fiction, but one of the main things I read was detective fiction, okay?
Yes.
And particularly Chandler, and Marlowe has this moral compass, mm-hmm. this moral code, and I think it's very important to have that for a character, you know, a recurring character,
yes.
whether it be Marlowe or the Raven or whatever, because you need to feel, you know, there are times where you bump up against that particular code, and will he go over or will he not?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. You have to, for me, you have to take the reader on the journey with you, right? Mm-hmm. And the story will unfold. Like, people ask me, do you plot this out? I'm going, I haven't a clue, you know, where the story is going to lead me. I have a vague idea about where we're starting and where we may end up, but the story itself will unfold as I go. I'm about 125 pages into the story, and I have only started things moving now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many different layers already, and how they get sort of unfolded or folded back together, I have no idea. It will come, but it will come.
Yeah. No, that's, I got, you know what? I got to ask you guys, I'm going to throw this out there to both of you. Are you fans of Dexter at all?
Oh, yes. I love the show.
You love the show. Okay. What about you, Carl?
What show was it again? I missed that.
Dexter, the serial killer guy. Remember where he's
I've seen a couple of episodes. I've seen some episodes.
So,
not many, but I've seen a couple.
Okay, so, Roy, I'm going to ask you a question, and because, you know, we started down this path of the moral compass, and this is exactly what started going through my mind.
Yep.
Did you ever feel, I mean, I know you say you love the show, and I did to a point, but did you ever feel that they kind of, they were kind of flying with a wing and a prayer a little bit, and they didn't have the balls to let the character go where he should go. Like, there was always this, it always felt like there was this attempt to pull, they made him too likable. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You too. They came from a set of novels, or I don't know if it was a novel or a comic book, and they always refer to him as the dark traveler that's getting with him, and I think because of the strictures of TV as opposed to film. That, there's only so far you can actually go to make it palatable for mainstream TV, they kept hammering home that he's a serial killer, but he only kills bad guys.
But
there's killing bad guys and then there's dismembering bad guys. It's a little different.
Yeah, for sure. They lost. Did you watch it religiously, or was it like just something?
No,
like,
I watch it and go away and then come back to it. To see what was happening. I was more curious than anything to see how they would actually develop the character, or where they would actually take it.
Yeah, but they never did.
I was just
curious because I'm seeing some parallels there. In terms of with the whole Twisted Pieces with the Doctor there, and what Carl was saying about the moral compass. Where are you going off the Twisted Pieces, Roy? Because is it going to be more? Obviously, you do the books. Obviously, that's kind of your bread and butter. But are there more movies coming down the pipeline? What do you think?
I would say yes. It's been a long journey to get Twisted Pieces out, We've learned a huge amount along the way. There are other screenplays that I've written, but we may take a look at. Ryan is busy at the moment, shooting a whole bunch of commercials and some more music videos. So he's taking a little pause on the whole filmmaking process, but we will get together for sure. And go off and do something else. It's just, we have the bug, and we love what we do, and the people that we work with love working with us. So, yes, I am sure we will. The indie film world is, it's small, but it's very enjoyable. So we will see. I have other screenplays that we may tech into, move into pre-production or production. But more discussions to be had around those, for sure.
One thing
I will say this on IMDb, it shows that it's in pre-production, A Fine Night for Dying.
Yeah, that was there's two. There's one called Soundbite, and there's one called A Fine Night for Dying. We started working on both of those, right, which is, we've been talking to some of the characters, so we haven't gone full blown let's do this one or let's do that one. We've done a lot of preparatory work for both, but to actually get down to the nubs of let's start shooting, not quite ready for that yet. But yes, we will continue this. It's too much fun.
Too much fun. I love it. I got to ask you, and this is something I wanted to ask a second ago. I know it's kind of one of the more sort of mundane questions, but obviously I have a lot of friends and family and colleagues in the UK. In terms of distribution, what's happening on sort of the international front with Twisted Pieces?
The deal we have with Factory Film is for North America. So Ryan, my partner, is out working with some other folks to see if we can find a distributor in the UK and in Europe. So we're actively working on it. That's the best way to describe it.
Okay. So in terms of maybe, is there any chance of like a limited theatrical run over there maybe?
You know, we never know. A lot of it comes down to the distributor that we can find, and then they decide what they really want to do with it, be it, you know, push it out on, you know, viewer's choice or video on demand, or put it in theaters. Mm-hmm. That's entirely okay. Up to the distributor. We have little control over that piece.
No, for sure. Absolutely. So someone comes along to you, Roy. I mean, you've obviously now you're kind of playing in that independent film sandbox. And as you said, it's too much fun. Right. Suddenly someone comes along and says, here you go. Here's, you know, $70 million. Boom. Dumps it up in front of you. Yeah. What would you want to do? What would you, if you literally had kind of like that sort of blank check, what would you like to go out there and do in terms of your next movie?
I have one in the back pocket that I think has a lot of potential, and it's called Going for the Bull.
And going for the bull?
Going for the bull. Yeah. It's a darts movie. No one's ever done a darts movie yet. And it's my homage to the Full Monty for one of my favorite films.
Amazing.
So this is one that's in the back pocket. You know, if we, you know, we'll make one film, then we'll make another one, we'll make some more money, we'll make another one, get more funding, more investors, and then we're going to make Going for the Bull.
Amazing.
And that would be it. And by that time, you know, I should have a decent enough portfolio that I can call Liam. Liam, we're going to make Going for the Bull. Right?
Oh my God, that would be amazing. That's hilarious. I was just going to say to you, actually, obviously I've got Raven's Justice here in front of me, which, as I said to you today, Roy, that's my next up to read. Do you have obviously you can't give spoilers to the audience and people, fans that read these books, but do you have an end game? Like, do you ever have like an end game in mind where you think, okay, this is where I'd like to see the character end up, or are you just enjoying the journey as you write them?
Oh, right now it's just enjoying the journey. It's just enjoying the journey. That's it. I love to write. I write every day. And for me, it's, I always tell people it's actually cheaper than therapy, so
yeah,
somewhat tongue in cheek. But I love to write, and that's—I have no end in sight for sure for now. There's lots of stories, and there are always new things that sort of go, I never thought of that, and then off I'll go. So, and you know, about as I say, when I'm coming close to the conclusion of Raven's Quarry. I already started thinking out, okay, well, where do we go next, or what will inspire me, or what will drive it? It's you never know. So yeah, I have no end in sight. I have lots of books in me.
That's amazing. And you talk about inspiration. I mean, everybody gets ask any writer, and they'll always say to you, "Well, I get inspiration." Everybody's got a different answer for it. What would you say is your biggest source of inspiration? I work a lot. Obviously, I get a lot from dreams myself. Where does your inspiration come from?
It comes from anywhere, to be honest with you. I meet a lot, just because of my profession, I meet a lot of very interesting people. Mm-hmm. And people have all these stories to share with you. And so something like that can sort of drive you in one direction. As I say, some of the inspiration comes from the news. Some of the inspiration comes from me going, you know, the absolute faith we place in physicians. Or I worked in biotech. You know, what would it take to fail a drug clinical trial? if someone wanted to sabotage it. That would be interesting. I actually, you know, some conversations I've had with mortuary attendants at a crematorium, you know, if I wanted to get rid of a body, how would I do it? You know, and the guy goes, well, you know, we've often talked about that. And he said, well, the easiest way is to put two bodies in one coffin. I go, oh, really? You know, you can do that? He says, oh, yeah, of course you can. You know? Interesting conversation.
Sorry, do you mind if I grab a pen for a second? I just want to make some notes here.
That was it. You just you can do that. So, okay, fair enough.
Carl's sitting there like, cut the show.
No. I'm saying, keep going. Let's hear this shit.
I want to hear this shit. Sorry, Roy, go for it. Yeah, so putting the two bodies together. Please continue.
Oh, no, it was a discussion I wanted to know. And people, you know, I ask, you know, innocent questions. I phoned Peel region, or it was one of the regions in Toronto, because I wanted to understand about slurry explosives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the use of. So they put me through to the TAC team, and the guy here is somebody with a Belfast accent asking about slurry explosives. Jesus, Murphy, you know, the next thing I know, my phone lights up, you know, from people calling me. You were asking questions about, oh, yeah, I'm a writer. Oh, and, you know, one of my favorite stories, if we have time for it, just a very quick anecdote.
Go for it, please.
Yeah, I'm a squash player. So
okay.
I was playing squash at the club one night. I was late. Getting from my game. So I ran in, just threw my stuff in the locker, ran up on court, you know, played my game, came down, opened the locker, and I go, my jeans are missing. Hey, well, what? That's weird. You know, look around, you know. Oh. And then it dawned on, oh, no, you know, I left my car keys in my jeans. So rush upstairs out to the parking lot, my car is gone. So,
oh,
you know, talk to the folks at the front desk, and they call, you know, police report, all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Had to go get a taxi home in soaking wet, you know, squash gear. So, next day I go to work, you know, called the insurance company, did all that stuff. And then I had to go out for a bunch of meetings in the afternoon. So, I got back to the office, and at 12 o'clock, the detective had called me. He said, you know, Roy, hi, yeah, can you give me a call, please? It's quite important. I go, you know, so I check my next message, you know, at 1:15. Hey, Roy, look, it's the detective. Can you call me, please? It's really, really important. Yeah, next message. There were 5 calls from the guy, and progressively more annoyed. So I called him, and I said, hi, it's Roy. I got, you know, all these messages. What's up? Did you find my car? And he said, before we talk about that, I have some questions for you. Sure. So can you tell me what was in the car? I think that there was a broken laptop in the back seat. There was a backpack. I think my fishing gear is in the trunk. And then there's this silence. And, you know, I've taken, you know, forensic courses and whatnot, so I know what the guy's doing. He wants me to fill this space with something, right?
Okay.
So I just wait. I go, I know what you're doing. Just ask me a question. He goes, can you tell me about the body bags and the flashbang grenade and the handguns?
What?
I go, fuck. Oh, pardon me.
No, that's okay.
I had forgotten that we had been shooting a pickup scene for the movie, and I had left the props in the back of the car, and somebody had stolen the car with all this stuff in it. So when they found it, they opened the trunk. Oh, wow. They had to call the TAC team out to check the weapons. They were very interested in the flashbang grenade, and, of course, the body bags. So I had to show up the next day at the police station to get my car that had been dusted inside and out for fingerprints.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God.
So there's the wonderful stories that just absolute coincidence, right? So could I write a book around that or a story around that? Yeah, absolutely.
I'm surprised the guy didn't pull a Columbo on you and say, like, oh, there's just one more thing. Like, oh, God.
Yeah. No, they were all waiting for me at the station when I showed up.
Oh, my God. That is
funny,
absolutely,
Roy, like,
amazing.
If you ever need extras for your movie, we've got real guns.
That's funny.
Oh, geez. That's so epic.
Yeah.
That's absolutely epic.
Roy,
that's
just a name. Yep.
Sorry, no, please continue. Go on, what are you going to say there?
No, I was just saying, you asked me where inspiration comes from. It's just an everyday event, right?
That's epic, dude. That's amazing. That's honestly one of the best stories I've heard. That's crazy. But listen, we are slowly creeping up on the hour, and I really want to give you that opportunity. Let's tell people, where can they see Twisted Pieces? Anyone coming out of this show now that wants to go do it? It's Amazon Prime that it's playing on, right? Is that correct?
It's an Amazon Prime in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on Shaw On Demand in Canada. It's available in iTunes Canada, and it's available on iTunes US at the moment.
iTunes.
Those are the places where it's available. And I think if you actually go to my website at royfrench.com, I think it has all the links there as to where you can actually see the movie. And we'll update those as we find new distributors in different countries. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And just to give the listeners a heads up, I'm going to be posting those links on we'll be posting them on the Incredibly Strange Films page. I'll be posting them on my iScreens page, and I'll be posting them on my LinkedIn so that everybody can get and see this film and support. Because, you know, independent films, that's what we're all about, right? We got to support.
Yes.
Got to support. And what's paramount for you right now, Roy? What are you absolutely working on at this moment in time that you can tell our listeners before we pass this over to Carl?
Well, for me, right now it's continuing to work on Raven's Compass. That's it. You know, I'm into the flow of it, and it usually takes me about a year to a year and a half to write a book. So I have a few more months ahead of me to get this one in the can or in the editor's hands. So that will
Beautiful.
Be it for now. And then, you know, in the coming months, Ryan and I will be sitting to have a chat about where do we go next movie-wise. So
good stuff. And if any listeners out there want to get on the Raven franchise, get on over to royfrench.com, or again, I'll be posting the links. And you want to read these books? Boom, go for it. Go take them to the beach. We're all going for lockdown again soon, so we're going to have plenty of time to read, probably. So, that was a depressing note. I shouldn't have said that. Man, I want to.
No, that's okay.
Carl,
because you know what?
Carl,
we do have a lot of time. Let's face
Carl,
it.
I know this is your time of night when you like to do your housekeeping and let people know what's coming up on the shows. So I'm going to pass on over to you, sir.
Okay, fair enough. So on Deviant Legion tomorrow on the ISF podcast, we are going to have director, producer, writer Sam Ervin. Sam began his career working with Brian De Palma, and he also directed a film in the 80s called Guilty as Charged with Rod Steiger. He is directing numerous Hallmark Christmas carols, Christmas movies right now. He also prepared the package for Frankenstein, The True Story. It just came out in Blu-ray. He also has even a children's book out and a new book that just came out this week. So and he's also done biographies of film people and so on and so forth. The man is an absolute blast. Strap yourself in because it's going to be crazy with Sam. I love him dearly. I've done interviews with him before. On Wednesday, we are going to have Mika and the Diva Hour. Mika, all I can tell you is this. As she saw a movie on Hulu called Bad Hair, and the title of the show is Bad Hair, Bad Movie. And she'll be complaining about that movie, and I'm sure she'll have some other things to say. So it's always good to have Mika on. And on Friday, Adam Ferenz in the Cathode Ray Mission is going to have a show on Wes Anderson and his films. So we're going to be doing that on Friday. We have more coming, but right now nothing's set in stone for the week after. But we do have people that have agreed to be on. We just have to settle in and get them all set up. So there we are. That's what we're doing on Deviant Legion. I'll give it right back to you. And Roy, before I go, I'm going to get your information from Limes, and I'll be in contact with you.
That'll be wonderful. Thank you.
Fantastic. And Roy, before we say goodnight to everybody, just want to say it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, my friend. Please come back anytime, okay?
Wonderful. I will do.
Best of luck with Twisted Pieces and all of your Ravens books as they continue to hit the bookstores there. That's it from us at Terror with the Twisted Limes. I want to say good night and God bless, and speak to you all soon. Have a great night. Take care.
All right. Good night, everyone.